Hey, we're at the Legends Fan Fest here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and we're here with the Stro, who's going to be at the Brawl at Broad River Electric, August the 9th, 8 p.m. Stro, tell us who's going to be there that night, and I hear there's a big title match.
Papa's excited. August 9th, Gaffney, South Carolina. Papa's returning for his children once again. Big show. Davey Richards, one of the Wolves from TNA Impact. Papa's taking on one half of the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton. He wants to come play with Papa to take my friend, the Trans-South Wrestling Heavyweight title from Papa. Good luck.
Hey, he said it better than I ever could. August 9th, the Brawl at Broad River Electric.
Wing them all.
Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show, as always. I am Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Quitman, and he got the whole world in his hand.
Hey, I was watching Money in the Bank. For us, it was just last night. And as Bray Wyatt was climbing the ladder, I thought, boy, he's a lot closer to that championship belt than his dad ever was.
Yeah, that's a fact.
You know... Mike Rotunda was a good worker.
Yeah. He's a good utility guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Could put, and then you got to have those guys.
Yeah, right. You put him in a good gimmick, and he could work the gimmick. And
Yeah, it was good stuff. All right, today on the Double Dropkick Show, this is the wrestling podcast where we talk about the wrestling you grew up with. Today we're talking about some of our favorite matches from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. And what we're trying to do is, as we've gotten into the show, there are certain people that we love, certain matches that we love, that always come up.
Yes.
Just in the flow of conversation, these things are going to come up. So what we're trying to do today is talk about matches we haven't talked about. To talk about, and we're not saying...
Or maybe just touched on and didn't really elaborate.
And we're not talking about, hey, these are the greatest matches of all time. Just for us, hey, these are some matches I remember.
Yeah.
This elicited an emotional response from me, and we dug it.
Yeah, so, yeah. I took, when you said, hey, give me your favorite matches from these three eras, for me, it wasn't, this is my be-all, end-all list of the greatest matches of all time. And I tried to focus specifically on the major companies. There's a lot of stuff I like from around the world.
Right.
I didn't put that on there. It was pretty much WCW and WWF.
I was thinking about this the other day. I would love to do an episode where we talk about the primary differences between Japanese and American wrestling.
Yeah.
Because there are, in a lot of ways, I find the Japanese product superior.
Oh, yeah.
To America.
Yeah, in ring wise, yes.
So anyway, that's, hey, totally
you know, another off the subject, I always defer to you for the creative aspect of the show. Let's talk about this. So I like to let you pick that because you're good at picking topics better than me.
Right.
I don't praise you a whole lot.
Well,
but with that, I do. You're really good at saying, let's talk about this. And it always works for me, and I can always come up with stuff. But since we've started something that we've kind of kicked around and something I really want to do, maybe we should be talking about this off the air because people probably don't want to hear it. I would like for us to take some of these matches that we're going to talk about today and watch them together and talk about them as we're watching them.
Yeah, and record that. I think that would be awesome.
Just as an experiment to see. Let us know if you think that'd be something you'd be interested in.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to, you know, I think we've talked about this before with, I can't remember which.
The Bash, the Great American Bash.
That was so terrible.
Right.
And doing the voiceover.
Yeah.
I think that's still something we need to do.
I do too.
And we just recorded our episode on announcers. So now I'm very interested in that. I want to see, am I as good as I think I am?
And I think you'll find that you're not.
Well, I have lofty expectations.
You love you some you. Like Terrell Owens. Boy, I love me some me.
I'm the Rob Van Dam. That's right. If I had TNA interest music, it would say Heath Mulligan in it.
That's right. It'd say Beefus.
Beefus. Oh, my goodness. I'm telling you, you talk about bad gimmicks that you never get over.
Hey, where did that nickname come from?
Okay, we were in third grade. We had to do poetry or something.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamie Scott, his poem was Heath the Beef, the Cool, the Brief. And that was it.
You remember that, huh?
How could I forget? Because I was known as Beefus to,
right, to this day. Yeah,
to this day, the people in that class and that class, Miss Langford, Miss Langford's third grade class.
I was in that class.
I know.
I was in that class.
That class picture led off our graduation video.
Yes, it did, didn't it? And actually, also in that video, I remember because Tracy Sanders had a copy of it. I never got a copy of it.
Yeah.
But I can remember watching it. There's a picture of me body slamming you. Do you remember that?
I remember getting body slammed.
I was holding you.
Where were we at?
And you were looking at the camera. I don't remember, but you were looking at the camera, and I was holding you in the body slam. Yeah. And we were both smiling, looking at the camera.
I wasn't smiling on the inside.
No. You were probably terrified. All those power bombs you took on that couch in the student government office so I could practice for my in-ring career.
I remember we went out on your trampoline one time, and you said, hey, let me power bomb. Let me tell you, that was a one-move day. That was a one-move day. Mark, powerbomb. All right, let's go inside.
Can we just go play the wrestling video game some more?
Can we just go inside now? So, all right, let's start out with other than our matches, which you always they were always a squash match with you and I. Let's go back to the 80s. What are a couple of matches that stick out in your mind?
When you said 80s, the first match I always think of was Magnum TA and Tully Blanchard, Starrcade 85, I Quit, and a steel cage.
Yeah, is that on your list?
I haven't seen your list.
No,
you haven't seen mine. That's organic, right there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the match that I always think of. And at the Fan Fest, you know, they're having the photo op with Magnum and Tully in the cage.
And I will pay for that.
Are you going to pay for that one?
I will do that.
I'm thinking I'm gonna go with the Dusty Rhodes Harley race because I don't know that I'm gonna have the opportunity to ever get that again.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's Magnum and Tully and you inside of a steel cage, I may get that too. I don't know if that's what the deal, if it's going to look like you're in a cage or what,
or if it's
just standing between the two of them. But the name of it is Inside the Cage with Magnum and Tully.
Yeah.
So my assumption is there's going to be at least that old cage they used to do for interviews behind you or something. I don't know.
Yeah. And let's you know, people who watch Wrestling Day, you may not get this, but at that time, if there was a cage match, just a cage match,
mm-hmm.
it was a big deal.
Yes, it was the end of the feud.
Yes.
You didn't start with a cage match. You finished the feud in a cage.
And the object of the cage match in Mid-Atlantic was not to get out of the cage.
No.
The object was to basically two men enter, one man leave.
Yeah. It was.
This is going to settle the score.
Nobody's getting in. They didn't do these little cheap gimmicks now where somebody comes up through the ring. It was the end.
Yeah.
The cage was there to keep the Four Horsemen or Baby Doll out.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes the cage was there to keep other people out. Sometimes it was there because maybe the heel was run.
Right.
But it was to,
we're going to settle the score.
We're going to lock these two guys in.
Yeah.
A steel cage. And finish it.
And somebody's going to bleed.
And on top of that, in this instance, Magnum had won the U.S. title from Wahoo McDaniel.
Mm-hmm.
And Tully cheated. He cheated! Tony, did you see that? And won and beat Magnum TA for the belt. And this feud had gone on that at this point, I'm sure there had been I Quit matches before.
Probably. But I'd never seen one.
We'd never seen one.
Yeah.
And it wasn't,
people didn't quit like they do now. Now, Now tapping out, you know, whatever. But back then, no, there wasn't no such thing as a tap out. Somebody had to say, I quit.
Yeah.
And that was the whole gimmick behind that match. Somebody's going to have to beat somebody so bad.
Yeah.
And these were not submission guys. A lot of times now they save those matches for submission wrestlers.
Right,
this was, I'm going to beat you to a bloody pulp.
Yeah.
Until you finally say, I can't take it no more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, Tully never quit.
This is true.
Just this for the record, Tully never quit.
And so that match should still be going on.
It should still be going on today.
19 years. All right. So let's talk about I quit matches. Mm-hmm. Okay. Today, to me, the match that ruined I quit matches, it's a match we've talked about before. Don't want to spend too much time on it. Was Rock and Mick Foley,
mm-hmm.
where they took the recording of Mick's pre-show interview,
right,
where he says, I quit," and they played the audio.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that ruined the I quit match.
Yeah.
When they say I quit match,
they call it a submission match.
I don't. When Magnum TA and Telly Blanchard said we're gonna have an I quit match, you thought somebody was going to die.
Yeah. And it during the match, they sold it as somebody's going to die.
Because
it was, if you go back and watch it, there was a lot of times it was just two guys rolling around on the mat trading punches.
Yeah.
There was nothing technical about that match.
No.
It was just them punching and kicking one another.
I don't know that there was any wrestling moves.
I don't think there was. I don't even know that Magnum hit him with the belly to belly. I don't even think that was used.
Yeah, because you couldn't pin him.
He wasn't trying to pin a guy. He was trying to incapacitate him, make him say, I quit.
So the end of the match comes. Now, all right. I don't know if you remember this. Were you in course in middle school, Mr. Fleming?
What do you think?
All right. We show up to school. Okay, fifth grade, I think. We show up to school the week after. It was Thanksgiving break, 85, Starcade.
Mm-hmm.
We show up to school the next week. Mr. Fleming has got a Magnum TA poster, a Dusty Rhodes poster. He's got two or three posters of wrestlers in his music room, in the little, what do you call it? The trailer that you went to for course.
Okay.
We're like, Mr. Fleming, you like wrestling? He said, yeah, I went. And he had gone to Starcade.
Really?
And I think that was the year. Did they do it in two different places? And he had gone to Atlanta.
I don't remember.
I can't remember. But he was at one, and then and he told us.
Well, I think 86 might have been the year they went.
And he told us, hey, this is who won. And he told us the ending to all the matches. And that's when I first heard about, because the first thing I said, hey, did the Rock and Roll Express win? Did Magnum TA win? How did Magnum TA win? And he told me how Magnum TA won.
Yeah.
And to this day, there has, in this is just one guy's opinion, take it or leave it, there has never been a more brutal, believable, or just
barbaric.
Yeah, that's a good B word right there. Ending.
Yeah.
To a match.
Yeah.
To end a feud.
Mm-hmm.
That this is done.
Yeah. That was, and by chance, they knew, I read Mid-Atlantic Wrestling Memories by Mike Mooneyham, which is a great book.
Yeah.
I'm going to write a review for it eventually. I just hadn't got around to it.
Yeah.
And he talked to both of those guys about that match, and they knew that they were going to use the chair.
Yeah.
But the way that the chair broke, it looked like a weapon.
Yeah.
They couldn't have asked for it to break better than it did. It was intended to use the chair. They didn't expect it to break the way it did to a jagged edge.
Yeah.
And it just looked like he was trying to jab it into his skull.
So, all right, so let me ask you that. So how were they planning to use the chair?
The way they used it.
What
was supposed to happen happened. It was just the way that the chair broke.
It
made it look like a weapon.
Because if you've never seen that match, number one, what's wrong with you?
Right.
Number two.
Stop. Pause the show.
Yeah. Stop where you're at.
Go if you got the network. Starcade 85.
Yeah.
If you don't have the network, go on YouTube. It's probably there.
Yeah.
Watch that match and then come back.
Yeah. Please.
Yeah. You need to
We're doing you a favor.
Yes.
You're not doing us a favor. We're doing you a favor.
Right.
They get into this match. Baby Doll throws the wooden chair into the ring.
Mm-hmm.
When it hits, it doesn't shatter, but breaks.
Right.
And there just so happens it's almost like an L shape.
Yeah.
And the tip of it was almost like a fork.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It didn't break clean.
No, it didn't. It broke jagged, and it just, it's awesome.
And I think what they were planning on doing is this wooden chair, which I don't know where they found a wooden chair.
I know.
I remember one time, Dusty, it was, you know, Clash of Champions, they're wrestling in the stud stable, and Ming comes in.
Yeah.
And Dusty's like, goes out, gets a wooden chair from under the ring, which is gimmicked, hits him with, that's a great. That
did the
great
same thing with Big Bubba Rogers, and his hat didn't even come off.
Yeah. Remember that? Yeah. But this chair shatters.
Yeah.
Chair breaks perfectly.
Yeah.
And I think they were thinking, all right, we're going to have to break the chair.
Probably.
Which would have been great. But as fate would determine. And they go back and forth with this. And for a second, you think, Telly Blanchard is going to blind
mm-hmm.
Magnum T.A.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to die.
Yeah. Because as a 10-year-old child.
Yeah.
Especially.
Yeah. You think, somebody's got to stop this. This can't, you know.
And then Magnum got the chair, and you said, oh, yeah. No, y'all don't stop it.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
It's time for Telly to get what's coming to him.
On top of Magnum. Magnum kicks him off. Mm-hmm. The piece goes flying. And Magnum gets up pretty much. He doesn't rush.
Right. Nothing is rushed about that match.
And it's like, he grabs it, and Telly Blanchard sits up, and he just stabs him.
Right in the forehead.
And
he starts digging it around.
And you can go back. They were both bleeding at this point.
Right.
But the blood starts to flow.
Yeah.
And let's say this. At that moment, you believe these guys hate each other.
Well, there was some real heat,
right,
between them. I think,
but to do something like that, there's got to be.
For those that don't know, Magnum T.A. is married to Telly Blanchard's ex-wife.
Right.
For those that don't know.
Right. Right.
From what I understand, they help raise one another's children. Very good friends today.
Right. Right.
But I'm sure back in the day, I mean, when it's fresh.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
But there's had to have been a little bit of real animosity there.
Yeah. Yeah. And they get the microphone, the with the cord and everything.
Yep.
And you're
no
right.
Flag on the mic. Just one of the mics, no. Like we're talking in right now.
Right.
Old and school.
As a matter of fact, this is the mic.
That's right. Is that
this,
it? That's
this
the
is
one?
The actual one. There's still blood on it. And Tommy Young gets that mic, and Telly Blanchard, like you said, he never quit, but he says, yes, 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 yes. And like, just like a desperate man.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
You were in. You were hooked.
I was hooked.
You were
those first few years of watching wrestling, because that was started watching in 85.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah,
probably started watching in 84, got hooked in 85, and then saw that match.
Let me ask you this, Mark. You would think a lot of people think an I Quit match that somebody, the guy who quits, that it's almost going to bury him.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I still hated Telly Blanchard, but I respected him.
Yeah.
After that match.
Yeah.
Didn't have, well, heck, I'd have quit.
Anybody would have quit.
Anybody
would
have quit.
Well, at the time, that was part of it. You didn't see submissions by big stars.
Yeah.
The only guys that really submitted were the underneath guys.
Yeah.
The big stars really didn't quit that often.
Right,
back then.
Right.
So that was part of the stipulation.
Yeah.
Was, I'm going to make you quit, and it's going to demoralize you because you had to.
Yeah.
Somebody's not only going to get beat, somebody's getting embarrassed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I go back to the Ric Flair, Terry Funk I Quit match, which pales in comparison.
Don't jump ahead now.
Oh.
Don't jump ahead.
Oh. Oh.
Because I will take you to task on pale in comparison.
In my, because there's no blood.
Well, Who cares?
And speaking of that, we're going to do an episode just on blood.
Yeah.
Here coming up.
That's all we're going to talk about is just blood. No matches or anything. Just different blood types. And,
you
know.
Vampires.
You know. We're going to talk about Twilight. True Blood.
No. No. All right. So the I Quit match. What's another match you got from the
80s? Well, I tell you what. I have a series.
Okay.
So if you would like to share your
Let me match, share mine.
And then we'll talk about what I want to talk about. I'll give you 3 minutes and then I'm cutting in.
I think once you hear what I'm gonna say. So 85's this I Quit match, something that at that time you and I had ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think 86. I'm pretty sure it's 86. They announced something no one had ever seen or heard of.
Oh yeah.
War Games, The Match Beyond.
Yep.
This feud between the Four Horsemen and Dusty Rhodes and the Road War, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
This feud cannot be contained by one ring. It cannot be contained by one ring in a cage. This now is two rings surrounded by a cage with a roof. And I want to say this, and I hope you'll agree. This is one of the things, sometimes we disagree. I hope you agree with this. When you watch later War Games, they pale in comparison to that first one.
Right.
In my opinion.
Especially, because I'll tell you, I didn't have this written down to talk about, but it is on my favorite match list.
Right.
I think the reason is, especially when Hulk Hogan got involved.
Yeah.
The point of the War Games was that the baby faces were always at a disadvantage throughout the match.
Yeah.
You know, with the every couple of minutes, somebody new comes in. So there was always that 2-on-1, that 3-on-2, 4-on-3, 5-on-4 disadvantage.
Comeback.
Right. It was a constant match of comebacks, and then it's 1-on-1 and the baby face wins. It was set up that way. And then when Hulk Hogan got involved, they flipped it where the heels would be at the disadvantage. That wasn't the point of that match.
Yeah.
The point of that match was to settle a score and to keep the crowd heat into it.
Yeah.
If the heels are at a disadvantage, how do the heels keep the heat?
Yeah. But the fact, when you get to that very first War Games, it was such a spectacle.
Yes.
Of what in the world are we about to see? There was something about, we weren't there, but there's something about being at, if you've never been to a show where they have to set up a cage.
Yeah.
When we used to go to the Greenville Memorial Auditorium and you would walk in and you would see the cage leaning up against the wall. That's the first, we knew where they stored the cage.
Right.
When you would walk to your seat, you looked.
There's going to be a cage match tonight.
And you knew that it was going to take them about 20 minutes to set it up. It was old school. Now, to me, I just watched the War Game. You know, we watched the whole Shockmaster travesty and all that. But I watched that War Games.
Yeah.
Shockmaster Sting, Davey Boy Smith, and I can't remember who their other partner was against, Harlem Heat, Sid Vicious, and Vader. I think Vader. And they lowered it down. It's just not the same.
Yeah.
I understand. I understand time. That now that you're doing a pay-per-view, it's not direct to video. I understand you got time constraints. And here's another difference in War Games. That first War Games, you know, and what was great about that first one is J.J. Dillon and Paul Ellering getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
And
so there was that chance that Ellering might get submitted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because remember, for those that don't know, the match didn't start until all 10 men were in the ring.
And it was called The Match Beyond.
The Match Beyond then, because they made that announcement.
Yeah.
For just a quick rundown of the rules, there was a coin toss to determine the order. And you had two guys start the match, and then every 3 or 4 minutes, another competitor would enter. So there was a constant disadvantage of 2-on-1.
And the heels always won.
And the heels always won the coin toss. And then once all 10 guys were in the ring, they would go over the speaker and say, now War Games, A Match Beyond, begins.
Submit or surrender.
Submit or surrender. And the match, so you, these guys have been wrestling for 20 minutes, yeah. 30 minutes, and the match hadn't started yet.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Which was a cool premise at the time.
Yes, yes. So up to this point, you've just been beating the slop
right,
out
it's
of
just
each
been,
other.
You've been beating each other up for nothing at
and
this
so
point.
And so many times it was Dusty and Arn. I think Arn always would always start. But that very
and
first.
And Hawk always came in last.
Yeah. So that very first War Games, JJ comes in at the end. And I can't remember the. They did the Doomsday Device.
Right. And really legitimately separated his shoulder.
And you could tell as soon as he hits, it's a bad fall.
Yeah.
And, man, kudos to JJ Dillon. He tried to take the Heenan bumps, but Heenan knew how to.
Right.
Was a better bumper than. I mean, JJ sacrificed his body. Right. So many times.
JJ was a good worker back in the 70s.
Yeah.
So, but he had gotten a little bit of age on him by this
point. So he gets hurt, and JJ was the one that was going to submit anyway. Mm-hmm. And it would be crazy to find out 20 years later that was a work.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because it's always been sold as that was a legitimate
injury. Yeah, because he wore a sling.
Yeah.
And, all right, so
even
JJ
today,
submits.
It's shoot style, he says he separated his shoulder.
So then you go to the next. War Games,
mm-hmm.
They bring in Big Bubba,
right.
the War Machine whose
yeah.
mask looks an awful lot the Midnight Riders mask.
Yes, it did.
And at the end, War Machine comes in. They get the spike.
Mm-hmm.
And off the Road Warriors' shoulder pads, and they dig it in his eye.
Mm-hmm.
And go back, you know, go back to I Quit match. You didn't lose any respect for Telly Blanchard quitting.
No.
You didn't lose any respect for J.J. Dillon's supposed to quit.
Right. He was supposed to take the fall.
But when you see War Machine, it didn't bury him that he submitted because they were putting a dang spike in his eye.
Right. Anybody.
War Machine, yeah. The War Machine was not going to. He didn't need to go over.
Right. He didn't really exist as much of an entity before or after that match.
Right.
He was kind of brought in as we bought an insurance policy
That's
kind
right.
of thing.
So I fast forward to, and I don't mean to get off subject. I feel the need to just talk about this. You fast forward to this War Games. I can't remember the year. Shockmaster, Harlem Heat. And the rules were different. The time periods weren't as long. But at the very end, Shockmaster comes in. Throws a couple of punches, puts Booker T, like I timed it. Shockmaster's in the match 3 minutes. Like the whole War Games match is less than 25 minutes, which is a trap. The War Games usually not begin
until the 25 minute mark, yeah.
And he makes Booker T submit to a bear hug.
Yeah.
To me, that's what's wrong with wrestling. Just submit to a bear hug? It's War Games.
Right. You can't,
something we've never seen.
Right. You can't muster up enough intestinal fortitude to stay in a bear hug for a minute or two.
I remember one time they undid the turnbuckle and hit, I think it was Bobby Heenan.
Eaton.
Bobby
yeah.
Eaton. They hit him in the arm with like part of the steel thing.
Uh-huh.
And then somebody, I think Sting, throws him in an arm bar and acts like he's going to rip his arm off. You didn't lose any respect for Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby. Anyway, I say all that to say, we're grumpy old men. We like it the old style. The old country way.
That's right, the old country. Well, you might. Old country way ain't really my thing. But
any other thoughts on the 80s and on those early War Games? Which
loved those. One of my favorite
Jerry's
matches of all time.
That,
Jerry's video wore it out.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times. We talked about that on our very first show. I don't know how many times I rented that tape.
Yeah.
Now I've got the War Games Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So I can watch them anytime. And I have. And I've watched dang near every War Games match now because they're all on there.
Yeah.
Some of them were great up until the one you're talking about with Bobby Eaton.
Oh,
that point, I thought they were all good.
Yeah.
After that,
it just kind of went downhill fast. It lost its luster.
Yeah, it did. You know, the fruit was off the vine.
Yeah. And today, like, people were talking about doing War Games with Evolution and the Shield. And to me, War Games doesn't work today.
Right.
And neither does Hell in a Cell. Because there's no bleeding.
True.
And I'm not saying we got to have blood. It's not wrestling without blood. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that when you have a match in a cage and you slam a guy's head, if the point of being in the cage is I'm going to use the cage as a weapon.
Yes.
And there's not going to be blood. I don't believe anymore.
Yes.
If Randy Orton needs 12 staples because he gets hit wrong with a ladder.
Yeah.
On accident.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Then why wouldn't you intentionally, if you're trying to bust somebody open, why wouldn't you be able to?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I agree with you. I think you're right about that. When I watch the Hell in a Cell matches now, they're not the same.
Because
I know nobody's bleeding.
No.
We need to save some of this blood talk.
Though. Yeah. So let's move. You got your series of matches, and I know what you're going to talk about, and I'm excited to talk about it.
All right. Let me lay the timeline out
for
you.
Do it, bro.
And then you give your commentary on this thing. Starting out, 1988, we see the young Stinger make his appearance. Or maybe 87, somewhere. But he begins to get really popular in 88. And at the first Clash of Champions, he and Ric Flair have their first big singles match. 45-minute draw. Everybody says it. Put Sting on the map.
Yeah.
Sting's a man now. And then Flair steps back from Sting a little bit.
Yeah.
I think he goes into a feud with Luger. He does some things with him. And then WCW Saturday Night, Ric Flair, and I don't remember who his partner was, taking on Eddie Gilbert. It's probably Arn, truth be told, but taking on Eddie Gilbert and a mystery partner.
Yeah.
And the mystery partner turns out to be Ricky Steamboat.
Yep.
He shows up that night, cross body block, pins Ric Flair. Automatic number one contender for the world title.
Yeah.
Then they have this series of matches that, while they're not the kind of matches that I can go back and watch once or twice a year,
right?
Still put on a clinic. Now, allow me to pause for just a second because I want to tell you something that's happened. I've heard that if you like those matches, the matches from the 70s that they had and early 80s over like the US title were better than those matches. And here's something exciting that a lot of people need to be made aware of. There was a guy who was a friend of the Crockett's and when they would come up to Greensboro and places like that, they gave him permission to shoot video in the arena for his own personal, just so he could watch him back. He was that big a wrestling fan. Yeah. He knew the family. They said it was okay.
Yeah.
These tapes have been lost
for
years. They have recently been found and WWE has purchased them.
Oh, wow.
And they say that there's a lot of footage of Steamboat and Flair from the 70s. They also have Nature Boy versus Nature Boy on those tapes with Flair versus Nature Boy Buddy Rogers.
Wow.
So that's been found. WWE has already bought them.
Wow.
And they should be for the either on DVD or for the network here in the next year or two.
Wow.
Just wanted to throw that out there so people would know.
Tremendous.
And hopefully there's some Johnny Valentine and Wahoo McDaniels matches on there because I've been looking for those for years.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you have the incredible Steamboat matches, the three matches. Steamboat wins the title. Flair wins the title back. At the final match that they have.
Yeah.
And then Terry Funk comes in to congratulate Ric Flair.
Well, Rick. Hey,
pile drives him through the table.
Yeah.
You go to Great American Bash 89. People ask me all the time if I'm watching one pay-per-view on the network, which one should I watch? And I always tell them the same thing, Great American Bash 89.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time that you have Funk has now attacked Ric Flair and turned him babyface.
Mm-hmm.
You have Sting and the Great Muta feuding over the world TV title.
Yeah.
So at Great American Bash 89, Sting and Muta have sort of a dusty finish to their match where both of them get pinned. Muta steals the title, so their feud's not over.
Yeah.
Flair and Funk have their big match.
Yeah.
Ric Flair wins. Great Muta comes out. And Funk and Muta and Gary Hart have now joined forces to create the JTEX Corporation.
Right.
And they proceed to stomp a mud hole in Ric Flair, and Sting comes out to save Ric Flair. Wow.
Yeah.
As a kid.
Yeah.
Well, not a kid at this point. You know, getting on into my teen years.
Yeah.
This is my favorite era ever in WCW wrestling, and that's why I want to talk about all of it.
Yeah.
So you go from that to now, Sting has joined the fight, and they close this show with the most incredible brawl you will ever see in your life.
Yeah.
Every time you think it's over, somebody slings a chair or cusses somebody, and it starts up again.
Now, which show is this?
This is Great American Bash 89.
Bash 89,
It solidifies Ric Flair as a babyface because now he's joined forces with the – because Dusty's gone.
Right.
So Flair is – and Sting are the number one baby faces in the company now, and they have joined forces to battle the JTEX Corporation.
Right.
You go through a lot of different things. Terry Funk comes out on one of the Clash of Champions and puts a plastic bag over Ric Flair's head and tries to suffocate him. That was very, very, very cutting edge at the time.
Right.
You get to Halloween Havoc. They have the Thunder Cage match.
Yeah. With special guest referee.
Special guest Bruno Sammartino. And you have Flair and Sting win that match, and it effectively, at the next Clash of Champions, Flair and Funk, I think it was the next Clash of Champions, Flair and Funk have that famous I Quit match.
Right.
The match at the Bash 89 is a better wrestling match, but the I Quit match is really a really good match as well. So I would always tell those two matches are two of my favorites. The Thunderdome cage match is one of my favorites. The Flair Steamboat stuff is one of my favorites. You have now with those feuds ending after the I Quit match, they kicked Funk out of the JTEX Corporation.
Right.
You go to Starrcade 89, there are really no big feuds going on at the time. So you have a round robin tournament.
Well, and at this point, too, don't forget, I mean, I know you didn't forget, but our fans should, that with Sting and Flair, Arn and Ole have returned.
I'm getting to that.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. That's all right.
Go ahead.
No, please.
No. Well, I might be getting my timeline mixed up. Was that before Starrcade 89 or after when they came?
No, it was before. Yeah, it was before. They have reformed the Horsemen.
So the Horsemen, at this point, Starrcade 89, the Horsemen.
Yeah, because Ole had come back as the enforcer, as the designated Terminator in the Thunderdome match.
Right.
And now you have them officially making Sting a Horseman. But we get to the round robin tournament, and you have Muta, Luger, Sting, and Flair. And it's a point system. It's convoluted.
Like the World Cup.
But the finals, like the World Cup. Be glad when that's over and we can all go back to, pretending like soccer don't matter again. But you have in the finals Flair and Sting.
Yeah.
The winner gets a shot at the title.
Yeah.
Flair was already the champs. I don't know why that matters. Yeah. But you get the shot at the title, and you're declared the superstar of the future.
Yeah.
So clearly Sting wins, and he wins a title shot.
Yeah.
Then we get to Clash of Champions 10. We have the famous, we were going to jump on you that night, but Flair said, no, you let it, he saved me. We let him live once. We let you live once.
And Sting, you're not going to be a horseman anymore.
That's right. So you have that famous angle now where they kick Sting out of the horseman. Sting gets injured that night. Yeah. He's supposed to go on and challenge Flair for the title. He gives the shot to Luger instead. They want him to drop the belt to Luger. He says, no, I promised it to Sting. He's just going to be out a few months.
Yeah.
That's the difference between an A-plus player and a B-plus player. He tears his knee. He's only going to be out a little while. He's still on TV.
Yeah.
He still showed up. He was in Luger's corner, even though they had not been friends on TV. Yeah. Luger had been the heel. He was in Luger's corner for his match with Flair.
Come on, Luger.
Right. He's cheering him on. But we get to Great American Bash 90. The theme is around the July 4th. It's All American. Sting comes out in red, white, and blue. Got the red, white, and blue face paint and the jacket. And Sting,
awesome.
Sting wins the world title for the first time.
Yeah.
That, I know I ran through it kind of quick, and I probably missed a few things and jumped around. But that's the essence of what happened at the time. And that era and those matches, I
define it.
Captivating to me, man. I was glued to that.
The Great American Bash, period, because the War Games, that was created for the Great American Bash.
Right. Which had been a tour.
Right.
Before pay-per-view came along. The Great American Bash would go from city to city and put those matches on.
But the Great American Bash DVD, Blu-rays getting ready to come out, United We Stand, and on the cover is Sting in that makeup, Mm-hmm. From the, that's how big of a title change that was.
It was huge.
Passing of the torch.
Yes, it was.
It was one of those. The good guys surrounded the ring that night.
Yeah.
And they come in the ring, celebrate with Sting. And I remember going out, Sting puts Flair over, says, "Hey, that man's a great champion." And
yeah, he did an interview.
You don't want to hear it.
Yeah, he did that kind of interview after that, acknowledged that
he
waited to drop the belt to him. And,
that was a great match.
Yes, it was.
That was a great
match.
That
was a phenomenal. Both of the Sting Flair matches, those two bookends of that angle are phenomenal.
One of my catchphrases is, if it's logical, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Sting's coming back from a knee injury. What's Flair's finishing move? Figure four. Leg lock. That match ends. Sting's going for a move, and Flair moves, and Sting hits his knee in the corner.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, oh no,
it's me.
Flair works on the knee, goes for the figure four, Sting rolls him up.
Sting proves he's not a B-plus player.
That's right. That's right. And, just a great match, man. Because you've been waiting. This is a 2-year build.
Yeah.
Because
they had the big match at the Clash, and then they were friends.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he moved to Steamboat, and then they became friends, and he just knew one day it's going to happen.
Before that Clash 88 match, you knew Sting. He was, you know, he'd been in Gilbert Hot Stuff Incorporated. He'd been in a tag team with Rick Steiner when UWF came in.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those UWF stars never heard from again. Sting was that one guy. And it's almost like they threw him in that Clash match just to see sink or swim.
Right.
And he proved him. Sting, please go in the Hall of Fame. You know,
I keep waiting on him to show up on WWE.
I was hoping he'd show up last night, climb the ladder. All right,
me too.
That would have been awesome.
Had have been.
There's no moments like that in wrestling anymore.
No, nothing.
No surprises.
No, there's no surprises anymore.
All right, we're in the 90s. We just talked about.
That's all you have for the 80s.
Yeah.
Okay.
What else you got for that?
No, I got. That's all I got. I just thought maybe you had something else.
No, because I was. That was. Because I knew we were going.
Did I steal some of your thunder?
No. I love the fact that our first match for both of us was the I Quit match.
Isn't it always amazing how that seems to happen?
Yeah. Because hey, it's the wrestling we grew up on. Let me throw out a '90s match, and this may be the one that.
Well, let me finish my Star Crunch cake before you set me off.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you and I watched this match together, if I'm not mistaken. The setup for this match was, again, this is not a great match by any stretch of the imagination. The build-up was not that great, but I like the ending of this match. The NWO has come in. They've been there about a year, a little less than a year. And they have been kind of poking fun at these older guys. Earlier in the show, Slamboree 97, in a match I don't want to talk about, Mongo McMichael wrestles Reggie White.
Oh, Lord.
But the main event of that show, Flair had been out with a shoulder injury.
Uh-huh.
He comes back, and it's Flair, Piper, and Kevin Green versus Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and Six. Now, this was an intriguing match to me because, all right, you know, Kevin Green was the
player for the Panthers.
For the Panthers. It's in Charlotte, I think. I think it's at Independence Arena, but it's Flair's return. It's Flair's hometown. It's all of that. And the match ends with, kudos to you. This is what I remember about that match. I remember this one move, and I remember the end. This one move, Scott Hall does the fall-away slam on Ric Flair, who is his first match back from injury. And you commented, look how he protected Ric Flair. I mean, this is almost 20 years ago. But I still remember, as we're watching it, you said, look how smooth that was. Look how he – and I just was like, I didn't think about wrestling in those terms.
Right, right.
And I just remember that moment, you know, just, oh, that's pretty cool. Maybe he doesn't. Yeah. Maybe they don't really hate each other.
Maybe they're not trying to hurt one another. You know what I remember most about that was a line that I'll still throw out occasionally was Arn Anderson had on a football jersey. And this might have been a promo before it.
Yeah.
But he tried to take the football jersey off, and he did it in a way as to illustrate, I'm too massive to wear this football jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
And he looks at Kevin Green or whatever, and he goes, I ain't never met a football player that I couldn't walk over to get to a better fight.
That's great.
I thought, man, what a line.
But this match ends. Flair's got somebody in the figure four. Piper's got somebody in the sleeper. And Kevin Green is pinning somebody. And it's like, it could have killed the NWO, because they're getting beat by two old guys and a rookie.
Yeah.
But it was, for me, as a 97, I don't know how old it was.
It must have been Arn saying that to Mongo. Was Mongo in the match?
Mongo wrestled.
Okay, there was
some, Reggie Wire.
Maybe I'm got Arn's promo confused with something else because
I remember him saying
he said he couldn't. He never met a football player, but he wouldn't have been saying it to Green because that was his partner.
Build up to it.
Yeah.
Was that 97?
Heck, I don't remember.
But I remember
all that WCW stuff was kind of convoluted at the time.
Yeah, I just remember somehow you and I promise you and I watched.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I mean, we've gotten together over the years just to watch wrestling, so I don't doubt
that
we did.
But for me, that's a man. I remember, like, that was the period when I had been in college, didn't have cable, had not watched a lot of wrestling.
Yeah.
Didn't even know Hogan had turned heel. I was on a summer tour. I got to, I'm like, what in the crud? So my memories of the 90s, a lot worse than yours. So that's my match. I'm sorry that it's not a Hall of Fame match.
What I remember about that is being really impressed with Kevin Green.
Yes.
His athleticism. Yeah. I remember.
He wasn't terrible.
Right. He, as far as like football players who have tried to come wrestle, he's probably the best.
He was a lot better than Mongo.
Yes. A lot better. I just remember that. His athleticism in that
match.
And he
had good fire.
Yeah.
Fire, good body.
And he Flair on his shoot interview talks about it. Hall and Nash kind of had said something to him backstage because they kind of got that smart alecky attitude.
Yeah.
And that Flair said they don't realize how close they were.
Really?
To Kevin Green whooping both of them. And he said, and his words was, Nash is a pretty tough guy, but Hall wasn't. And I feel pretty confident that Kevin Green could have whooped both of them at the same time if he'd have wanted to, because he was that bad.
Yeah.
You know, he was that bad. And he said most of those guys probably don't realize how close they were to getting whooped that night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he said if he, knowing what he knows now, he would have instigated it if he'd have known.
Well, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
He said he diffused it, but parts of him wishes he had pushed the right buttons and got great. Go ahead. He's messing with you.
What are some matches you think that you can think about from the 90s?
We always talk about WrestleMania 25, Undertaker, Shawn Michaels. It was in the 2000s, and as close to perfect as a wrestling match can get. But in 97, they met in the first ever Hell in a Cell match. Man. And that I watched it night before last.
Yeah.
And I watch it once a year, probably.
Yeah.
Like I watch Star Wars once a year.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Phenomenal match. The match at WrestleMania is great.
Mm-hmm.
This match is different because they were both in their prime.
Right.
And if you watch the slow pace, and this is not a criticism in any way, because I think that is a perfect match at WrestleMania 25.
Right.
But it's clear that they're older and their bodies won't allow them to do some of the things that they did 10 years before that. It's such a fast-paced, hard bumps.
Yeah.
They go up on top of the cage. Michael's hanging off the side. His bump from the side of the cage, he fell maybe 3 less feet than Foley did. Foley's fall gets all the praise for being a bump off the top of the cage, but Michaels was hanging off the side of the cage.
Yeah.
The length of his arm to the top of the cage is how much further Foley fell than him.
Now,
so it was still an insane bump.
Did he bump on the table?
Yeah, he bumped off onto the table. He was hanging, and Undertaker stomped his hands.
Yeah.
And he flew back and fell onto the table down below.
It's a good thing he knew how to fall.
That's a good thing he knew how to fall. There's another where Undertaker backdrops him over the top rope, and he hits the cage wall and then flops onto the floor. And it's a nasty bump, man. He took some nasty, nasty bumps in that match. He juiced himself and gashed his face open.
Oh, I just remember
that. Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the ones we're going to talk about on our blood show.
Yeah.
And he
cut himself deep.
Joe Frazier was
like across the nose. Oh. It seems like. I don't know if he slipped or what happened there, but it just looked like he cut himself a lot deeper than he intended to. Yeah. And I remember the next night him having a gashed open face. Oh, on Raw. But man, that match, another one, if you haven't seen it, press pause, go watch it and come back.
So, all right, so if they want to do that, what?
It's 97, Bad Blood, I think is the name of the pay-per-view.
Yeah. All right, so let me stop you there. 97, I just talked about a match from 97, WCW.
Uh-huh.
And Slamboree versus a WWF pay-per-view from 97, Bad Blood.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, Hell in a Cell, Ric Flair, Roddy Piper, Kevin Green versus
Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and X-Pac.
That's what
Rick Martel, Bruiser Brody. That's what you get right here on the double.
But that's, it was different. You had very different wrestling.
So whatever you liked, you could find it.
And everybody didn't complain.
No.
But
that's because if I didn't like Raw, I could watch Nitro. And if I didn't like Nitro, I could watch ECW because all three of them were good.
Yeah.
Nitro, not toward the end, but I mean, it was still a good wrestling program, despite how history tries to paint it as it was just this awful time in WCW. They made more money in that era.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than they ever did before. That's the only time they were really financially successful.
Right. Right.
Those, was in that. And it was good. Weeks. I would never, ever, ever take away that NWO angle
was awesome. Yeah.
Goldberg. I don't like Goldberg, but if I was going to craft a professional wrestler, he'd look a lot like him. And he was believable.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about Goldberg that I have to give him credit for is mark at 25. Uh-huh. If I got into a fist fight with CM Punk, would I win? I tend to think I would.
Mm-hmm.
If I got in a fist fight with Dolph Ziggler, would I win? I tend to think that I would. If I got into a fist fight with Goldberg, nah, probably not.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's, for me, a big litmus test for who I like in wrestling. If I feel like they couldn't whoop me in a real fight, it's hard. Now, I'm not talking about me today now. Don't get me wrong. CM Punk would probably wipe the floor with me today.
Yeah. So, all right. Heath at 25. Could I outrun Dolph Ziggler? Perhaps. I don't think I could outrun Goldberg.
Right. Yeah, he could run to 40 and 4.2.
He would kill me.
Could I outrun? Could I whip Harvey Whippleman at 25 years old? Maybe.
It would be close.
I know there's people listening going, boy, Mark's really got a high opinion of his street fighting abilities. Okay. But I don't, and that's the point.
Right.
I don't have a high. I just don't. I'm 6'5" and 375 pounds of muscle when I'm 25 years old.
Yeah.
You know, does that make you tough? No. But man, in a fight with a guy who's 5'8 and 185 pounds, I got a pretty big advantage, you know?
Yeah. And Mark, some people have this, correct me if I'm wrong about it. I don't want to tell you how you are, Mark.
Oh, but please do.
Some people would have this alarm in their head. Like, if they were in a fight, they would have this alarm in their head that would be like, okay, stop the fight. Mark does not have that alarm. Mark has that, I'm going to finish this.
To my detriment, yes. I mean, and I'm not. Right, I'm not this big brawling street fighter. I've never gone looking for a fight, but I've been in a few.
Right, right. And when it's done, the dude is not gonna. It ain't gonna be. Trying to think which one it was. Was it Die Hard where the bad guy just kept popping up and popping up? That doesn't happen with Mark Whitman.
Well, thanks for putting me over. But no, that's a bad thing if you're in a fight and you don't know when to stop.
Well, yeah. I mean, but what I'm saying.
That's why I don't get into fights, man.
Me too.
Because I don't want to get into trouble.
Right.
You know, the last time I got into a fight, there was a lot of concern on my part.
Yeah.
That I was going to get into some legal trouble over it.
Right, right.
And I didn't.
Yeah.
And this has been, the statute of limitations are far, far worn out on this fight, I can promise you, because I was in my early 20s.
But I say all that to say, when Mark tells you that at 25, he could take out a couple,
I could give him a fight.
Yeah.
But not Goldberg. That's my point about Goldberg.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I look at him, I see a tough guy.
Yeah.
I know Jericho tells a story
right.
about choking him out. I don't know. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I know that it did happen.
Right.
But there's a difference between grabbing a guy in a front face lock as you're having a conversation and getting into a fist fight with somebody.
Right.
There's just this two different things.
Yeah.
You could walk over here and snatch me up in a front face lock right now, and I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to be able to do anything about it.
I don't.
Well, maybe not.
I don't think you understand.
But you know, if the story was they stood face to face and came to blows,
ding ding,
ding ding ding. I don't believe that Jericho wins that fight. 10 times out of 10, Goldberg wins that fight.
Yeah.
So I would always give Goldberg credit for that.
Yeah.
And his matches were believable.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got talking about Goldberg on my favorite matches, because I don't even like Goldberg.
But we're talking about being believable. And from the 90s,
yeah,
one of my favorite, I think this is the 90s. You can correct me if I'm wrong. When he beat Hogan for the belt.
Yeah.
That was a good great moment.
Yeah,
That's one of my favorite matches. Because at that point in time, I had Hogan fatigue. Mm-hmm. I had NWO fatigue. I had the whole, I'm tired of seeing this stupid spray-painted belt.
Kind of how we feel. I felt after Money in the Bank.
Right. Well, I'm
starting to feel.
I'm tired of this guy that only wrestles once a month. And I'm tired. Tired of it.
Yeah.
And so when Goldberg freaking spears him, and they still haven't repaired the roof of the Georgia.
No, that was a pop right there.
They did not pipe in.
No.
No,
that was good. And that is a cool match.
Yeah.
And Goldberg also had a great match at Halloween Havoc with Diamond Dallas Page.
That's the one where the
feed got cut.
Oh, yeah.
Man, if you've never seen that match, that's an incredible match. Whether I like a guy or not, I can always give credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
When there's a great match. And that Goldberg DDP match at Halloween Havoc, that's an incredible match that everybody needs to see.
Yeah.
It will dispel there again that Goldberg can't work kind of stuff because he had an incredible match. Goldberg got in the ring with somebody that kind of knew how to, maybe it was a trust issue with him, that he trusts them to get them to a good match. Because I think he had a lot of paranoia and a lot of trust issues with getting jerked around.
Right.
But with Paige, I mean, I think he listened to him.
Yeah.
And they just had a phenomenal match.
Yeah. I think, we just did our overrated. I'm one of the... Man, we're totally off subject, but I'm one of those. If you put DDP in the underrated category, I could agree. And if you put him in the overrated category, I agree.
Yeah.
But I agree. And I don't know what else to say about
him. I think he's good. I think he had great matches, and he had great matches with Savage.
Yeah,
That was a great feud, man. Yeah. Some guys just have a natural chemistry together.
Yeah.
And those Savage and Paige just did.
And the bad thing with DDP is our last memory of him is this, the thing with Undertaker.
Yeah.
And I just thought they botched that.
I did too. And the way Undertaker, the way they beat him and Canyon down, because Canyon was good.
Yeah.
Canyon, when you talk
better
about.
Better than Canyon.
Well, I think underrated guys, Chris Canyon.
He would do phenomenal a new move every match.
Yes, he did. That's exactly right. He was an innovator.
Yeah.
It was something different every week. That guy was a phenomenal talent in the ring. And I don't know why he didn't go further.
Don't know why he was feuding with Glacier.
Well, I mean, even that gimmick, that Mortis gimmick that he had was good. I know you'd... taking the Glacier stuff out of it.
Mortis was good. Yes, I'll give you
Mortis
that.
Himself...
If you take... Glacier out
right,
of the
take
equation.
Glacier out of the equation and just look at the Mortis, at his moveset. And I mean, that was Canyon was talented.
Yeah.
A shame the way he wound up.
Yeah.
I hate that because I always liked him. And then they just played off the gay thing once he got to WWE and they did the Boy George stuff.
I didn't like that.
Like, I didn't understand that his sexual orientation had nothing to do. It didn't matter with Pat Patterson.
Right.
You know,
right.
I didn't understand why it had to be turned into some kind of thing. I just didn't like that.
I agree with
you. I didn't like that.
Any other 90s moments or matches you want to get on?
I got a couple. I mean, if you think we got time.
No, Hey, listen, this is our show.
We can make a two-parter out of it.
We can do what we want to.
That's right.
So I tell you what, let's finish talking about the 90s, and then we'll do another episode. We talk about 2000s and the first 4 years of this decade. What do you think about that?
Okay.
All right.
Why don't we pause now
and
do a part two? Because I still got two matches from the 90s, three matches from the 2000s. How many do you have?
I got a couple from the 2000s. So, yeah, we can do whatever you want to do.
Why don't we just... we can edit this part out, right?
Yeah.
We're just trying to figure out what we're going to do. I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Should we just go and then say we're going to cut it right here and pick it up next time? Or you tell me, because you're the editor on the thing.
No, I mean, we can... we just finished talking about Canyon.
Yeah. I don't think we need to put a two-hour show out there.
No. I totally agree. So let's do this. Let's... We'll stop it.
Let's just say, all right, fans, we're going to take a break right now.
And I'm going to go back. I'll edit it to when we finished talking about Canyon. And I'll say,
fans, we got so much stuff that we got to talk about. We're having a great conversation. Yeah, me either.
That's what's awesome.
We're getting good, man.
Because we can just go.
Yeah, with anything.
And it doesn't seem
and
like.
And we're chasing
it
rabbits.
Seem like we've been talking an hour.
So let's just come back and say, look, we got a lot left to talk about.
Yeah.
We know you got things to do.
Yeah.
Come back next week. We're going to have part two of the conversation.
So I'm going to do the I'll do this and say, hey, Mark, I'm sitting here and you've got some more matches from the 90s. We got some matches from the 2000s to talk about. Tell you what we're going to do. We're already about an hour into this.
Yeah. And we're about halfway done.
You're right. I mean, this is a great conversation. I mean, very few notes. This is a great conversation that I want to continue, but we want to be respectful of our fans' time. So here's what we're going to do, fans. We're going to end this part of the conversation. So come back next week. We're going to finish this conversation of some of our favorite matches from the 80s, 90s, 2000. We may even come up with more.
I got one that just happened a month ago.
Yeah. So we got some great, great discussion, but we want to hear from you. We always want to hear from you. Maybe you grew up when we did, and you remember that I Quit match. How did it make you feel? Did you think Magnum TA was going to blind that man? Maybe you're watching this. Maybe there's some 80s matches we left out. I'm sure there are.
Oh,
maybe
there's tons of stuff we haven't talked about.
Listen, we could have.
And who knows what's going to come up when we start talking about these next matches.
That's right.
Because I was not intending to talk about Goldberg at all.
No, but that's just how it flowed. And what we're trying to do now is we're trying to talk about stuff that we haven't talked about.
right, before. Right.
We're trying not to be repetitive.
Well, we don't want, we could talk about Austin Hart at WrestleMania 13. That's my favorite match of all time, right. And I can talk about it.
You could do a whole podcast on
that. But you've heard us talk about that match before.
Right. So, go to DoubleDropKick.com. Leave us a comment on this episode. Go on Twitter. Mark, where can they find you on Twitter?
The DDK Show.
You can find me at Heath Mulliken. Hey, go on our Facebook page. Post a picture. Post a comment. Let us know if we're crazy. Are War Games overrated? Is War Games 86, The Match Beyond, worse than War Games starring Matthew Broderick? I mean, nothing more disappointing than going on Netflix searching for War Games. And you know what? I was looking for I was hoping the War Games DVD wasn't on there, but I did watch War Games with Matthew Broderick. Let me tell you, times have changed since then.
Yes, they have.
Yeah, kid, I don't want to give away the end of that movie. But anyway, we want to hear from you. We want to have the conversation. What are some of your favorite matches? Why are they your favorite matches? We want to hear about your memories, because this is the Double Drop Kick Show.
And hey, while you're searching your favorite matches, swing on by DoubleDropKick.com, click on that banner.
Click on that
Sign
banner.
Up for the WWE Network. Follow the link, and you can watch almost, I'm going to say, every match that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
You can watch it. There, all of these matches will be on the network.
Yeah. Mark mentioned the book by Mike Mooneyham, Mid-Atlantic Memories.
Mid-Atlantic Wrestling Memories.
We will put a banner to that in the show notes. We'll also put that on the side.
That book.
Great book.
There's a lot of books that Ric Flair's got a book, all these guys. Mooneyham interviewed guys like Baron Von Raske for his book. Denny Brown. He's got a chapter on Ole Lars and Gene Anderson.
Wow.
Nelson Royal. You know, he's got a whole chapter on the Midnight Express Rock and Roll Feud.
Yeah.
He's got a chapter on Magnum and Tully.
Yeah.
Just the kind of stuff that WWE's not going to put a book out about.
Right, right.
And Mike Mooneyham discusses all that. And it's not his words. He interviewed these men.
Yeah.
And it's their story.
Yeah.
So get that book. I read it in like a few days. It's that good.
And Mike Mooneyham is just, as far as wrestling journalist, I mean, sports journalist, wrestling journalist, right, he's at the top of the
list. Yeah, he is very, very well respected.
Well respected by everybody.
In the industry as
right,
well.
He's not one of those guys that, he's not a dirt sheet kind
no,
of guy.
No, 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 not at all. No,
I mean,
not
he
at all.
Is.
His articles, and I say this respectfully, will remind you sort of the old 80s wrestling magazine type articles, not where he's not, you know, he's saying, oh, what's going to happen? You know, these guys hate each other, but it's a very journalistic style of writing. Because he is a real journalist.
Yeah, yeah. He's not writing from his mother's basement.
No, no, no. He's got a job. He's good enough at what he does that he gets paid to do it.
Yeah, that's right. But he's not like the internet wrestling community.
No, no, and that's my point. When he writes about professional wrestling as if he were writing about professional football.
Yeah.
He treats it with that kind of respect, and that's lost today.
Very much lost.
And I just think he's great at it.
Yeah,
and he's been very friendly on social media to me. And I've had a couple of discussions with him on there about just different wrestling. And he's always, not just me, with everybody. He's very interactive.
And looking forward to meeting him at the.
Yeah, I hope we run into him up there.
That would be great. And maybe he's seeking us out.
Yeah, I'm sure he's sitting around going, if he sees us coming, he's going to duck behind something. I'm pretty sure.
We posted our pictures on our website.
That's right. We don't want any of these
people.
We want
to go incognito.
That's right.
I may go under the hood, you know.
That's right. We're going to stand out like a sore thumb because as we've said, they're going to say, hey, those guys look like Barney Rubble and Fred Flintstone coming. I bet that's Mark and Heath.
Chris Farley and David Spade.
There's Foghorn Leghorn and that little chicken hawk.
I'm a chicken hawk. That's all. Anyway, as always, this has been the Double Drop Kick Show. I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whip.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.